you're a pretty opinionated fellow. These are supposed to be questions. Who's got the... You're a pretty opinionated fellow, yet you are generally hands-off when it comes to the leadership of your church. Well, that's nice. One, these are one, two, three, four, five questions, it looks like, in two groups. One, how are you able to do this? B, 1B, does this come naturally for you, or is it difficult? Two, what would you say are some of the signs that a pastor is micromanaging? How would micromanagement hurt a pastor's ministry? What would you suggest a micromanaging pastor do to become a better leader? Well, I appreciate that observation because I hope it's true, namely that I have really strong opinions about how to do everything that I watch being done. Usually, that's an overstatement, not everything. There's some things I really don't understand how to do, but I've got opinions about worship and how to lead a meeting and how the cloakroom in the sanctuary should be kept neat and how the spots on the carpet should be cleaned between Sundays and how the grass should be cut and how the air conditioning should be. And I mean, I'm aware of everything around me and how it should or could be. I'm INTJ. You know what the slogan of the INTJ Myers-Briggs thing is? The slogan is, there's always room for improvement. INTJ people are very hard to live with, right? Because anybody who comes into any situation, any relationship, and says, there's room for improvement here, Phil. You could be improved. Jason, you don't like to be around people like that, right? So I don't think I'm an easy person to be around. I really don't. So this observation that I come across as kind of hands-off for the church leadership makes me happy. Because I think I can gravitate towards micromanagement. So it sounds like this general thing is how do you avoid it, and what do you say to people who do it, and why is it a good thing? Micromanagement is counterproductive when it comes to morale building. You can't have a camaraderie of colonels, generals who are going together into a battle, if one of the generals is always nitpicking about the other general's clothes or marriage or horse riding skills or whatever, you better keep your mouth shut. This guy's, your life hangs on his fighting for you. And his vibrancy in the battle is essential to your own thriving. And so my mindset with my staff is they've got to thrive. They got to love being here. They got to love the vision. They got to love the theology. They got to love me. They got to love worship. So anything I do that's going to start turning the screws down on their delights and their joy and their passion in this church is a loser for me. I feel it. This does not feel like self-denial to me. This feels like maximizing my joy by keeping a happy staff, because a grumbling, unhappy, beat-down, discouraged staff is an end of my ministry. So I think micromanaging, just kind of constantly second-guessing the decisions that your staff is making, will destroy their confidence, their morale, their delight in ministry here. And they're smart. They know what they're doing in their spheres better than I do. My perspective is limited, flawed. Woe to me if I get into David Michael's office and tell him how to do children's ministry. That's just ridiculous. He knows better than I do. Or take Chuck and tell him how to work the worship band. It's just... So they're smarter in their spheres, and they have a morale that I need to nurture. And I would just say to pastors who are bent on micromanaging, they probably need two things. One, a heavy dose of confidence in the sovereignty of God, that he will work for him, even when he's not controlling everything. And number two, this is huge, choose your staff very carefully. There's so many pastors who think, well, what we need on this staff is some diversity in theology or philosophy of ministry. Well, that's crazy. You need diversity in personality. You need diversity in gifting. You need diversity in ethnicity and so on. But you don't need any diversity in the major theological issues that drive your ministry. And of course, for many pastors, theology doesn't drive their ministry. So if you choose your staff with a strong theological orientation, then this issue of letting them go for it. I'll give you an example. When we were looking for worship leadership, this is one of the hardest things because they determine so much about the ethos and the flavor of the main meeting week after week. And so you're making a huge decision when you choose a worship leader. And there is zero way you can micromanage worship leadership, even if you wanted to. So what do? At the front end, number one, you look for somebody who's passionate for Christ. Number two, whose theology is totally in sync with the Bethlehem Elder Affirmation of Faith. Number three, who seems to have the breadth and focus that sort of fits where the church is going. And I say it sort of because once he's here, what you say to him is this. I said to Chuck, you know, early on, Chuck, Rick, Dan, guys, it really matters that we are Bethlehem defined by these root commitments, philosophy of ministry, mission statement, affirmation of faith. But now, you be you. You got to be you. If you aren't you, if you're just kind of constantly watching John Piper, what's he thinking, what's he thinking, what's he thinking, and you're not you, everybody will know that. Everybody will know this is not real. This is a performance. This is an adjustment. This guy's not loose. He's not free. He's not himself. He's not engaging. So you got to give tremendous freedom to your staff once they're on board. But choosing them at the front end with the strong confidence in God's sovereignty is very, very crucial.